2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on this Friday. It's the 15th of March. It's halfway through March already. Wow. 15th of March. The Ides of March. Beware the Ides of March. This was not a good day for Julius Caesar way back when. 15th of March. A couple of weeks, we'll be right on the cusp of April. Next week, spring arrives next Wednesday, the 20th. So we had a little taste of it yesterday, too, didn't we, with that weather? Wow, 70s. Hit 75 yesterday here in Butler. It was unbelievable. A little chillier today, but not bad. Not bad. It's going to be much chillier, though, over the weekend. Coming up on the program today, we're going to be talking in just a moment. Our first guest will join us by telephone. Her name is Sally Rush Wagner, and we're going to be talking about the women's suffrage movement, the drive to give women the right to vote here in the United States. And that did not come until 1920. That's almost 100 years ago. In fact, they're getting ready to celebrate the anniversary next year, 100 years. So we'll be talking about the women's suffrage movement. Also today, we'll be chatting with Jillian Cantor, who has written a very poignant novel that's set during the World War II era. And that seems to be her specialty. This is the third or fourth book now that she's written dealing with that time in American history, the World War II era. So that's what's coming up initially on the program today. We'll also have guests from Butler Senior High School. They are about ready to raise the curtain on the school musical, which is Cinderella, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella at Butler Senior High. So all of that to come on the It's Your Turn program today. We'll take a quick break and then be back to talk with Sally Rush Wagner here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Time for a checkup for your pet. We recommend Suburban Animal Clinic. Or maybe Fido or Tabby's not feeling so well. Suburban Animal Clinic, a small animal veterinary practice located Route 8 south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's about 5 miles south of Butler. Suburban Animal Clinic, in the spirit of Dr. Dennis Damon. Their services include wellness checks for your pet, of course, also emergency care. They have laser therapy, dental available, also prescription diets. You know, one of the things that are problems for a lot of our pets these days, being overweight. Microchipping, they can handle that as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler. If you're headed south from Butler toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on your left. That's Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 south at Thorncrest Drive. Going to be talking about the women's suffrage movement. Listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest joining us by telephone is Sally Rush Wagner, who is the editor of an anthology of papers and other historical documents concerning the women's suffrage movement. Sally Rush Wagner, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thanks, Dave. Looking forward to it.
You know, there are some famous names that most of us probably saw in our history class, or maybe we even know the names from the past that are associated with women's suffrage. But there are a lot of names that we never heard of before, and you addressed that in your book, do you not?
If we had 5 or 6 days, we could go over all of them. I think the difference between the way that history has been told in the past, the great men model, and we learned the great women model, but in fact, this was a movement. There was no single woman that was the most important or that did anything more than really anybody else did collectively. It was a movement of thousands of women and male supporters around the country that began to create the change for women's rights.
Well, we know names like Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, but that might be the extent of it for most of us. You talk about, and this is fascinating to me, you talk about the impact that women of color had in the women's suffrage movement. Women of color, whether red, brown, or black. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, let me give you a couple examples. One is that, you know, if we think that history began with white people, we begin with 1848, the Seneca Falls Convention. But in fact, women have had political voice on this land for over 1,000 years. The Haudenosaunee, the Iroquois Confederacy, founded on the shores of Onondaga Lake over 1,000 years ago, women have political authority to nominate, hold in office, and remove the male chiefs that represent them in council. The men cannot have committed a murder, they cannot have committed a theft, and they cannot have abused a woman. And it continues today. The other thing is that the movement, in some ways, we might want to date from 1832, when African American women in Boston formed the first female anti-slavery society. They're working for an end to enslavement and the rights of African Americans. But beyond that, they're learning political strategy. They're finding their political voice, they're learning how to organize, and that's what they bring into the women's movement then when they begin to organize for their own rights.
A little bit about our guest listeners. Sally Rush Wagner was awarded one of the first doctorates in the United States for work in women's studies, and she is a founder of one of the first college-level women's studies programs in the United States. That was at CSU Sacramento, and she's currently an adjunct faculty member in the Rene Crown University Honors Program, Syracuse University, and the St. John Fisher Executive Leadership Program as well. So she's well prepared to gather all of these papers. Where did you find these? Are they available in libraries? Did you meet them during your years of teaching women's studies, Sally?
You know, it's almost 50 years of research, and it's initially, before internet, finding these in rare book rooms, in special collections in libraries, and then as I completed the book, finding amazingly that some of them were actually online and searchable. So it's a combination over a very long period of time that culminates in the wonderful research opportunities we have today with the internet.
We, this year, will celebrate the centenary, right, of giving women the right to vote here in the United States. You know, there are generations today, younger generations, that can't believe that it took until 1920 for women to get the right to vote here in the United States. One thing that I did not know until I picked up a copy of your book was that early on, we're talking back in the colonial days, women actually had the right to vote, right? And then they lost it.
Yes. It was in the colonies period, it was property that was the qualification. And if a man or a woman had sufficient property, they were able to vote. Once the states formed their constitutions, one by one, they made it illegal for women to vote. Only males could be voters. So when the suffragists organized, they said, we're not asking for a new right, we're asking for a restitution of the right that our foremothers had.
The title of the book we're discussing, listeners, is The Women's Suffrage Movement. It's published by Penguin Classics. I mention that because that's a pretty prestigious publishing house. The book is edited by Sally Rush Wagner, whom we're chatting with. And by the way, the foreword of your book is by Gloria Steinem. That's pretty that's pretty terrific, isn't it, to get her?
It really is. She's a friend, and it was very gracious of her to write the foreword.
A couple of other interesting facts, listeners, that I certainly didn't know until I picked up the review copy of this book. What if I ask you, listeners, who was the first woman to declare her candidacy for the presidency of the United States? Well, it turns out that it was a woman that I'd never heard of before, Victoria Woodhull. And irony of ironies, she spent election night in jail. What the heck happened to her, Sally?
Yeah. Well, the Christian fundamentalists were able to get laws passed through the states and the federal government declaring the press censor, Anthony Comstock, having the power and the authority to determine what was obscene in the United States. Comstock decided that anything to do with reproduction or sexuality was obscene. And so he arrested hundreds, maybe thousands of people around the country. And Victoria Woodhull had published in her newspaper with her sister two instances of hashtag Me Too. One of them was the most famous minister in America who was using his position to sexually, require his parishioners. And he was one of them. The other one was at a party with Wall Street operatives, which Victoria Woodhull and her sister Tennessee were as well. They saw two men systematically get a 15 and a 16-year-old girl drunk and then realize that they had sexually violated them. And so through they were arrested basically for Me Too exposures, and she spent election night in jail.
Well, here's another interesting fact that I learned from the book, listeners. New York suffragists protested at the unveiling of the Statue of Liberty in 1886. Why? Why? Because they thought it was a great hypocrisy, right, to represent women as a female form when that wasn't the case here in the United States.
It's the greatest hypocrisy of the 19th century to represent woman as liberty as woman in a land where not a single woman has political liberty.
We mentioned that it's hard to believe that women did not get the right to vote here in the United States until 1920 with the passage of, what amendment was that, the 19th? Is that the 19th?
19th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's also almost impossible for me to believe that the Equal Rights Amendment failed 20, 25 years ago. Tell us the story of that. What happened there, Sally?
You know, it was introduced first, right after women won the guarantee of the right to vote. Of course, that didn't mean that every woman could vote. Because of the voter suppression laws in the South, African-American women and men really didn't get the right to vote until the 1960s with the laws that overturned the Jim Crow laws. But 1923, the Woman's Party said, you know what, it's not sufficient to have the vote. We also need to have equal rights protected in the Constitution. And so they began the struggle in 1923, and today we are still waiting to have equal rights protected in the United States of America. We're kind of an embarrassment in the rest of the world.
Didn't the Equal Rights Amendment come close to being approved, but then failed at the last minute?
Yeah, three states short. And so now there's a three-state strategy, and if Congress will approve the ability to go back after the deadline and have three more states approve, the Equal Rights Amendment will be passed.
And this would guarantee things like, for example, equal pay for equal work and so on?
Well, it's really a tool. You know, the suffragists, some of the more progressive suffragists said, you know, the vote isn't an end in itself. It's just a tool that women can use to fight for their rights. Equal Rights Amendment will be the same thing.
Well, it's a good year to talk about this since we will be celebrating 100 years very soon since the passage of the women's suffrage giving women the right to vote here in the United States. That will be next year, right? When we'll celebrate the 100th anniversary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you planning a party, Sally Rush Wagner?
You know, I think first I want to see a truth and reconciliation to really look at the racism of the movement, the way in which it's set. Women people of color back. And I think once we tell the truth about the history, we can then celebrate the good parts of it. But we need first to take accountability.
By the way, in addition to this anthology, a collection of an incredible number of documents and letters and papers and so on, our guest, Sally Rush Wagner, has written a very comprehensive introduction to this anthology. The title is The Women's Suffrage Movement, edited by Sally Rush Wagner. She's been our guest here on It's Your Turn for the last few minutes. Sally, thanks for being with us. This is a pretty good book that you have here.
Oh, thanks, Dave. It was a pleasure visiting with you.
My pleasure. Thanks now. Still hard to believe that it took us till 1920 to give women the right to vote here in the U.S. Wow. Hey, one of our sponsors on the program today, Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, now celebrating 126 years. That's right. It's their 126th anniversary. They've been serving the Butler area since 1893, my goodness. Where families have been shopping for value and quality for well over a century. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street, downtown Butler. Spring just around the corner. You need new tennis shoes? Yeah? They got lots of them at Miller's Shoes. In fact, they have all your famous name brands right there under one roof. Whether you like Nike or New Balance or Saucony or Rockport or Kids or Skechers or Easy Spirit or Asics, they've got them all there in one place. Miller's Shoes. They also have hundreds of pairs of shoes on sale all the time. They're on racks for easy browsing. You can stop in, look around. You'll find famous name brands at Miller's: Timberland shoes and boots, Trotters, Rockports. They're also your local headquarters for SAS Comfort Shoes, and they are comfortable too. Oh, they have sandals too, SAS sandals. Stop in, take a look. Say hi to Jimmy Ciprian and the rest of the Ciprian family. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, now celebrating their 126th anniversary. Another one of our sponsors is Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. They package your items for shipping. How convenient is that? You can ship any way you want. They'll pack them up for you and send them either U.S. Postal Service or UPS or FedEx, your choice. They also have other services, too, copying, scanning, faxing. You can rent a temporary mailbox there. They even have an official notary. Open Monday through Friday, 140 Shockey Lane. That's in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. It's right behind the Kings and Villa Grande restaurants, just off Newcastle Road here in Butler. Phone for more info, 724-841-0044. It's your friendly neighborhood shipping center, Going Postal Butler. Coming up, listeners, on the next segment of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR, I'm Dave Malarkey. We're going to be speaking with writer Jillian Cantor about, I think it's a pretty interesting new novel. First of all, Jillian, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Your latest novel is entitled In Another Time, and it is World War II fiction, huh? That era. You've concentrated a lot in your last few books in that time period, have you not?
Yes. Yeah, my last book was also in that time period.
Well, tell us a little bit about In Another Time. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch?
In Another Time is a love story between Max, who's a Christian bookshop owner, and Hannah, who's a Jewish violinist. And they meet and they fall in love in Berlin in 1931, and they fall in love over the years that Hitler starts to rise to power. And the story is alternating points of view, half of Max's, half of Hannah's, and you get to see Max's story unfold in the 1930s in Berlin, and then Hannah's story unfolds after the war in 1946. She wakes up in a field with her violin. She has no memory of the past 10 years, and she doesn't know what happened to her or Max during the war, and so her story moves forward as she tries to figure out what happened.
Wow. We tend to forget. I know when I was looking over your book, you know, I'm familiar somewhat with the history of Europe at that time and Adolf Hitler's rise to power and so on. We sometimes forget that you know, people in Germany and Austria were living out ordinary lives at that time. It's not like they stopped living just because Adolf Hitler had come to power.
Exactly, and that's what I was really interested in exploring when I wrote the book. How did people live their normal lives as all these things were happening? You know, they still went to work. They still fell in love. They still lived day by day. And we have hindsight now. You know, we know what happened at this point. But people in 1932 in Germany had no idea what was going to happen, and I don't think that they would have believed it if you had told them. And so that's what I was exploring as I wrote.
One thing that some people may forget or may not have realized, you know, we think of Adolf Hitler as one of the most detested rulers of all time. He was actually elected.
Yes, yeah, and it goes through in the book. You know, you actually get to see the history of what happened, those little details that I didn't really know either before I started doing research for the book.
Well, it starts out in 1931 mm-hmm. in Germany where, as you mentioned, Max, who's a bookshop owner, Max Beisinger, meets Hannah. Hannah is Jewish, Max is Christian. In 1931, was there any problem with that in Germany, or did that begin to arise later when the Nazis rose to power?
You know, I think there was probably some level of anti-Semitism, but it really started to rise as Hitler came to power. And it started out, you know, small, and then it grew and it grew. And what I thought was interesting was that it sort of grew right before everyone's eyes, and I think people started to become numb to it. It was just the way that their world was. And then it got so bad at a certain point. But it didn't happen overnight. You know, it happened slowly over years.
In your novel, In Another Time, Max has a secret that he mm-hmm. he thinks will perhaps enable him to save Hannah if indeed Germany becomes too dangerous for her because of her religion. Due to his secret, he has to leave her for months at a time, leading up to the when she finds herself in a field.
Yes, so I mean, I don't want to spoil anything about the book, but Max does have a secret, and Max very much believes it's his job to save Hannah. But when you see Hannah's point of view, you realize that Hannah is really perfectly capable of saving herself, and that was sort of an important theme that I wanted to write into the book.
Okay, so we cut to 1946, and for listeners who may not be familiar with dates, that was the year after World War II ended. War II came to an end in Europe, at least, in May of 1945. It was a couple of months mm-hmm. later before Japan capitulated, but 1946 would be the year after. And when Hannah finds herself, awakens in a field, is she still in Germany or is she somewhere else?
Yeah, she wakes up in Germany, I actually said it in a fictional suburb of Berlin, but that's where she wakes up, in this fictional suburb of Berlin. And then, you know, she actually goes to live with her sister, Julia, who has moved to London, and her family, and she at first tries to start her life over in London, and then she ends up in Paris and Vienna and eventually in the U.S. over the course of the next 10 years.
And she attempts to, obviously, you know, wondering every day, every minute, I suppose, what happened to Max. She tries to fulfill her lifelong dream, ambition of becoming a concert violinist.
Yes, and the book is very much about the power of music in trying times. And Hannah has always dreamed of becoming a violinist. And, you know, the story is very much a love story between her and Max, but it's also a love story between Hannah and her violin.
Do you describe, for example, in the beginning of the book, whenever we're in Germany in a suburb of Berlin, do you describe the lifestyle, what was going on, what it was like to be in Berlin at that time in the early 1930s?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I tried to, so hopefully that does come across. But I was very interested in ordinary life. There was a bit of a depression. The economy was very bad. Max talks about the fact that he's really not selling enough books in his bookstore to keep it afloat, but his father has just passed away and he left behind a nest egg, and so Max does have a little bit of money, but people aren't buying books in the 1930s in Germany, and people are just trying to survive, and so you sort of get to see what the environment was like even before Hitler was elected.
And before the Nazis rose to power, Berlin was... It was kind of a pretty rough place, wasn't it? Kind of a bohemian lifestyle there for a lot of the people.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, Berlin and the life in Germany is definitely explored in the book. And one book I read when I was researching, which is nonfiction, but I highly recommend, In the Garden of Beasts, if you haven't read it yet. It takes place in Berlin in the early 1930s, and it's just fascinating and filled with amazing detail.
Did you go to Germany or Europe to research these books that you've written about the era of World War II?
I know. I have not, actually. Nope. I wrote them from here.
Maybe on your bucket list someday, huh?
It definitely is, yes. I would love to get there.
A little bit about our guest listeners, Jillian Cantor. Has a B.A. in English, bachelor's degree in English from Penn State, by the way. Nope, she's transplanted, though, now. You live out west, right?
I do, yeah. I live in Arizona.
Her master's in fine arts came from the University of Arizona. That would be the Wildcats, right?
Yes, that's right.
So you went from the Nittany Lions to the Wildcats.
Yep, some version of cat.
She's written a number of novels, including a couple of young adult novels, but more recently adult novels. And I tell you, I have to mention a couple of these, Jillian, because I've not read them, but they're going to be on my library list here, or my bookstore list. One called Margot and one called The Lost Letter. One in particular, it's Margot. You imagine what might have happened if Anne Frank's sister had survived. Can you just talk a little bit about that? What a fascinating idea for a novel.
Sure. So, yeah, Margot was published about 5 years ago, and I got the idea because I had always... loved Anne Frank's diary. I remember reading it as a 13-year-old in school. But I came back and reread it again as an adult, and I hadn't remembered that Anne had an older sister, Margot. I just didn't even remember that from my first reading. When I reread it again, I noticed she had an older sister. Her sister was also keeping a diary, but her diary was never found after the war. And I really wondered what her sister would have thought of what became of Anne's diary. And, I have a younger sister myself, and I always used to think that I felt this sort of kinship with Anne Frank. If I had been living in that time and I had been her age, I love to write, maybe I would have been keeping the diary. But then I realized I would not have been Anne, I would have been Margot. I was the quieter, older sister that would have been forgotten about. So I wanted to sort of explore her story.
Well, good writers, not only can they write well, but they come up with ideas like this, which is fascinating. By the way, The only survivor of Anne Frank's family was her father, believe it or not. He survived one of the death camps, but all the rest of the family perished. And tragically, toward the end of the war,
they
almost made it, but not quite. Yeah. Well, listen, the latest from Jillian Cantor, and if you're looking for her online, the last name is spelled C-A-N-T-O-R, Jillian Cantor. Her latest World War II era novel is called In Another Time. It's a novel about love and survival and passion and music. It takes you across time and across continents. It's a great story. Hey, Jillian, nice to talk with you today. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes.
It was nice to talk with you, too. Thank you very much.
All right. Good day now.
All right. Goodbye.
Are you a people person? Need to switch gears and try a new career? We need a fun-loving individual with an outgoing personality to sell our multimedia advertising products. You'll have the opportunity to develop client relationships and will have unlimited earning potential. The ideal candidate for this entry-level position is a person who cares about people and helping people solve problems. If you have a proven track record in sales or are willing to learn, consider applying for this commission-based position. Qualified candidates must have effective oral and written communication skills, college degree preferred but not required. Please submit a resume to Vicki H. at bcrnetwork.com or to this station at 252 Pillow Street, Butler, PA 16001.
You've lost a loved one. You feel alone. You think that no one really understands just how you feel, that it affects everything in your life every single day. Well, Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler offers a unique, sensitive program called Someone's Caring. It's carefully designed to help ease your pain and helps fill in the gaps when you feel so lonely. Men and women are invited to attend. Yes, more men are beginning to realize it's okay to express their feelings in a small group setting. They're finding it really helps. Over the last 20 years, we've developed a program that has helped so many people work through their grief. We offer five programs: a grief support group for those who have lost a loved one, for survivors of a suicide, for bereaved parents, and for those who have lost a pet, and individual sessions. Our own trained bereavement specialist, Robin S. Miller, personally conducts the sessions. Call us at Thompson Miller, 724-287-3706, 287-3706. We can help. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Welcome back, folks. Boy, interesting conversation there with Jillian Cantor. Fascinating story. Hey, we have a good story to talk to you about on the next segment of the program, too. Tonight is opening night for the musical at Butler High School, and we have several students here who are members of the cast, along with the director of the show and a faculty member at Butler Senior High, Dale Van Lanningham. Dale, good to see you. It always is.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks for bringing so many of these young adults down. We have four of the cast members, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's the show this year?
Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella.
Ooh, good one, huh?
It is. Yeah. It's a very good one, yeah.
Everybody knows the story, I think, but I'll be anxious to find out if there are any twists. Let's meet our cast members. I'll go around the table here. Hopefully I don't get mixed up. Joe Atkinson is with us. Joe, nice to meet you. Nice to have you here.
It's nice to be here.
Also, Madeline Welsh. Hi, Madeline. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Also, Drew Brown. Drew, hello.
Hey, great to be here.
And Amanda Bishop is here as well. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing? Well, let me ask about what roles that you play. I'll start with you, Amanda. Who are you in Cinderella?
I am Cinderella.
Ah, the title character, eh?
Yep. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of cool dresses. I don't want to, like, give anything away.
Dress up to go to the ball, I imagine, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of cool props and scenery, and it's just a really exciting show, and it's really geared towards younger kids and, like, the princess. And
yeah. What about you, Drew Brown? What role do you play?
My character's name is Jean-Michel. My character was not in the original version of Cinderella, but mm-hmm. in the musical there's a bunch of added characters and, like, added songs and scenes and whatnot, and my character along with that. I'm kind of like a revolutionary type, kind of like opposing the prince, his uh-huh. ruling, and I have sort of like a love line with one of the stepsisters.
Jean-Michel?
Yes, French.
Sounds like you rolled into the Cinderella territory from France somewhere, huh?
I would imagine so, yes.
Okay. What about you, Madeline? What part do you play?
I play Madame, and which is the evil stepmother.
Ooh, that must be a fun part, huh?
It is actually really fun, which I'm, like, usually, like, a nice person, so it's nice to, like, challenge myself to see if I could play a role that's, like, meaner and on, the villain side.
You can go over the top with it, huh?
Yeah, basically. Sometimes I go too over the top, but I try my best.
Well, you sure don't look like a mean stepmother. You must transform yourself, huh?
Yeah, with the hair and the makeup, it, like, puts me in, like, the mood so I can do, you know, pretty much the part pretty good.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And Jill Atkinson, what about you? What part do you play?
I play the part of Lord Pinkleton. He's one of the added characters, as Drew mentioned. So what he is he's the town shouter. We have the prince and his advisors and all that. Mm-hmm. And so what I do is I basically take the information that's given to me, and I go out to the town, and I tell everyone that there's a big number that I do where that revolves around that. So,
you know, we used to have town criers here in the United States back in the colonial
sure.
days.
Absolutely.
They would, before we had widespread newspapers and so on, the town crier would stand on the street corner and deliver the news, you know? Yeah. Well, that had them in England, too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A little bit about this show, Dale Van Lanningham. First of all, everybody knows the story of Cinderella.
Sure.
You hear this, I don't know whether the young adults here Did you hear this when you were kids? Did you heard about Cinderella? Okay, because it goes back a long, long ways. Grimm's fairy tales, I would imagine, or something like that. But it was turned into a musical by probably the most famous team in Broadway
musical
America.
Theater,
right?
Yeah. That was about 1957, if I recall.
Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah, it wasn't actually a stage show originally. They wrote it to be a television movie. The original was. It was so popular, then they made the script and the music available for community theaters and to do. And it's been done, of course, professionally and such. But it didn't go to Broadway for the first time until 2013.
I read about that. I was reading about Rodgers and Hammerstein. Wonderful collaboration, by the way. And this would have been very late in their career.
Probably
shortly before Hammerstein died because...
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was one of their latter shows, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was already ill when they did Sound of Music.
Right.
Which was their last big Broadway show. So this would have been the tail end of their collaboration. I was reading about it. It's something I didn't realize. Televised productions of stage shows were rather common in the 1950s.
Yep, 50s and 60s.
I thought that was something new whenever was it NBC did Sound of Music a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and then several.
It was actually done quite often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I knew of Peter Pan. I can remember that when I was a kid because that was replayed like 1,000 times. Mary Martin,
right.
Broadway star, did Peter Pan on TV. But I didn't realize they did so many of these other ones. I also found out how CBS got Rodgers and Hammerstein to agree to write this musical. They said, "We've already signed Julie Andrews to play Cinderella," and that sold them, you know. Yeah. Now, Julie Andrews is still with us, but she must have been very, very young.
Oh, yeah, 57,
in the late 50s, yeah. But she was already a star. She was doing My Fair Lady on Broadway. So Rodgers and Hammerstein said, "Yeah, we'll do it. we'll write the show. We'll write the show." Tell us a little bit about the music. I'll ask our cast members here. Amanda, what about you? You're Cinderella. Do you get to sing a lot of songs, or do you sing solos, or do you sing duets, or what do you do?
Yeah, there's quite a few. There's a lot of songs where, I just sing like a few lines in it, mm-hmm. but there are a few that I do like the whole song, and then there's a lot with harmonies with the sisters and just the whole cast. There's a lot of just great music in the show.
You have to sing with the evil stepsisters.
Yeah. It's actually this one number where we're all kind of like in our own imaginations having fun. Mm-hmm. That one's a really fun number.
Do you have a favorite song that you get to sing?
I really like the two that I do with the sisters because we like just run around and just have fun.
Mm-hmm.
They're called When You're Driving Through the Moonlight and A Lovely Night. They're back to back.
Did you know any of these songs? Had you heard any of them before you started doing the show?
I did. I had learned In My Own Little Corner, which is one of the songs that Cinderella sings alone, before this, and I already had really liked that song.
I'm guessing where that is. In My Own Little Corner, it's probably when she learns that the stepsisters are going to the ball and she can't go. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. Basically, just like that's my safe place where I can have fun.
My Own Little Corner. Well, let's talk with Drew Brown here, who plays the Frenchman. Jean-Michel?
Jean-Michel.
You get to sing any songs?
I do. Just a couple short songs. My character's not really much of a singer. He's a... more of like a comic relief type. He's doesn't have a lot of songs, but
I need you to get just a little closer to that mic for me there. That's okay. You have to sing in French or
no French accent.
French accent?
Just a French name.
Ah, okay. Can you do a French accent, Drew?
Probably not. it wouldn't sound very good. I could try.
Do you have to do a lot of dancing? Is there much choreography for your part?
Not for my part, but for like the ensemble and the dancers, they really have to move around, and there's a lot of like movements that they have to do. It's really incredible, and you get to see it.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Joe Atkinson? Does the town crier, the town yeller, have to do any dancing or no?
Not a lot of dancing. Most of my movements are just hand motions and things like that, but I try and make them pretty extravagant. I have my big number with Jean-Michel, where he talks about his ideas, and then I come up and say, "No, the prince is having a ball." you should care about that more. Ah. And that's pretty fun between the two of us usually.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
And then other than that, I really just do numbers with all the other guys.
Are you the person who announces that the Prince, in fact, is going to be having a big shindig?
Heck yeah.
The ball. The Prince is having a ball. Let me talk with Madeline Walsh a little bit here, who plays the... I still can't believe you're the evil stepmother. It can't be.
Like, I couldn't believe it either. I'm like, okay, well, I can do this, though.
So refresh us on the story here. Cinderella is an orphan, as I recall, right?
No, actually, I married her father, and then he died. And ever since, like, he passed away, I've just been really rude to her and basically made her do all, like, the chores in the house and everything that, like, needs to be done.
Okay, so it was her father that died, but she still had the stepmother.
Yeah.
Evil though she may be. Huh? And, of course, the... Two stepsisters?
Yeah, right? There's two stepsisters.
Who plays them? Do you know?
Samantha Barr and Zoe Wren. And their name is Charlotte and Gabrielle.
Mm-hmm.
So a little different from the Disney movie, but, you know, it's really fun. And it's just like, yeah.
I understand, Dale, and I've not seen this show on stage. I understand there are a number of different adaptations over the years since the late 50s. And in some cases... They added songs that weren't in the original television production. Is that true?
Yeah, the original one, the 1957 TV one, that's the one that probably most people have seen. It's been around forever, you know.
Yeah.
But then they redid it, and they did another TV performance of it in the 90s, 96, 97. Whitney Houston was the fairy godmother. That edition is available if you want. And then there was this one. This is the most recent one, the Broadway version, that's what it's called, 2013. So it's a lot of the same music from the original. They changed a few things. They updated the script a little bit. They shortened a couple of the scenes, you know, to give it a little more, a little bit of a quicker pace so it moves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a nice update. It really is.
Good songs?
Oh, fantastic songs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe not songs that are as well known as some Rodgers and Hammerstein standards.
But they're toe tappers, and you'll be whistling them as you're on your way home. No question.
That's the important thing.
Oh, yeah.
If you're whistling and humming them on the way out. Whitney Houston played the evil stepmother. You're stepping into Whitney Houston's shoes.
She was the godmother.
She was the godmother.
Oh,
yeah.
She was the
godmother.
The
fairy godmother, yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I have the two sisters and the evil stepmother. So the fairy godmother appears to you. Amanda, all right?
Can you repeat that?
The fairy godmother?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
She's yours. Here we go.
Oh, yes.
We had a brain cramp.
She sees you crying in a corner or whatever?
Yeah, she's like basically my best friend in the show, yeah.
So do you have the standard accoutrements, a pumpkin or a carriage or
all the above. We have a pumpkin, a carriage. We have four white horses. The prince has a horse. Everything you'd expect to see in a Cinderella performance.
Well, how in the heck do you change a pumpkin into a carriage in a live stage show? That must be a real trick, a theater trick.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. The audience, I think the audience will love it. Yeah.
Did I ever tell you about? Well, I did a. Was it's not a full blown play. It was like a 20-minute skit. That we did where we had to do one of those transformations live on stage. And we had very limited, this was low budget beyond belief. We got a bag of flour. We had to transform a woman from a witch into a gorgeous va-va-va-voom type woman. And we got a bag of flour and a long plastic pipe that we had running out onto the stage. And the witch was standing there, and at the appropriate time, had somebody blow flour through that tube, and it made this big white cloud.
Oh,
it'd
make
stage.
A cloud, yeah.
Yeah, and the girl switched, and the cloud went down, and there she was. I tell you, the audience loved it. Low-tech magic.
Low-tech is sometimes the best tech.
Well, I won't ask you how you do it, but people will be interested to see the pumpkin turn
it'll be a lot of fun.
Carriage. You have... Guys pulling the carriage, or don't tell me you have real horses.
Not exactly.
Intrigue. Yeah.
We have different kinds of horses. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Specifics on the show. It's this weekend?
It's tonight and tomorrow, yep. Curtain is 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
Ticket sales have been very good. We do have some left. I'm going to guess they're going to go kind of fast. So if you're coming, the box office opens at 6:15. What we have left. And
you get there early,
I encourage everybody, yeah, if you're coming, come early. Mm. It should be a good time.
And your curtain is 7:30?
7:30 both nights, yes.
I like a little bit of an earlier curtain for musicals,
yep.
Because they sometimes go a little bit longer than a regular stage play, and it's nice to get people.
Yeah, this one's running with the intermission. It's probably going to run just a little over 2 hours, about 2:15, mm-hmm. give or take, maybe 2:20 at the most. Mm-hmm. So,
Let me take a break here. We'll be back and talk more with the members of the cast, several young adults here from Butler Senior High School. We'll chat more with them here on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. Be right back.
Have the thoughts of becoming a caregiver for your parents been on your mind a lot lately? Maybe you're thinking about your own life in a few years. Pretty overwhelming, and you don't know where to turn. Let me suggest attorney Michael Pater. He handles each account like they were his own mom and dad. For elder law issues, wills, power of attorney, living wills, trusts, and more, call attorney Michael Pater at the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center, downtown Butler, at 287-7724. Representing individuals, families, and businesses for over 26 years is attorney Michael Pater, 287-7724.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back. We chat with four young adults from Butler Senior High School, cast members all, of the production of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella. It goes up on stage tonight and tomorrow night at Butler Senior High School auditorium. Let me ask, and I'll just take turns going around with our young adults who are here with us in the studio about any future plans that they may have. They may not know yet, but maybe an idea. Amanda Bishop, first of all, what class are you in at school, junior, senior?
I am a junior, yeah. And after high school, I would like to go to college for musical theater and move to New York City after that.
Wow.
And try to make a career in that.
Yeah. Have you done lots of shows before this one?
Yeah. I try to get involved in as many things that I can. Yeah, because I do, like, summer musicals, and I go to summer programs in the summer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, yeah, it's just, I'm happiest when I'm doing that.
Obviously, you can sing. I assume that if you've done all this, you have some dancing abilities as
well.
Yeah,
I've been dancing for quite a long time, since mm-hmm. 3, I think, yeah.
So what do you do? I'm guessing a lot of waltzing or something in this show whenever you're at the ball?
Yeah, whenever we're, we do some ballroom dancing, a lot of, like, elegant walking dresses.
Who plays the prince?
Miles Schaefer. He is a junior. He is Prince Topher.
Mm-hmm. Did you all know each other before you were cast in the show, or have you made new friends?
Yeah, we all knew each other. We've done a bunch of shows together.
What about you, Drew? Any idea what you want to do after? Are you also a junior?
I am also a junior, yeah. Yes.
Any thoughts about a career? I had no idea when I was a junior in high school, I'll be very honest with you.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but I'm thinking about I might want to do something in, like, personal training and, like, physical fitness.
Oh, great.
And, like, yeah, like, training people, becoming, like, fit and, you know, mm-hmm. losing weight or whatever.
That's a big career these days.
It's a big career, yeah. Like, you know, I'm, like, going out to L.A., maybe even opening my own gym if it, you know, mm-hmm. works out, but that's
wonderful.
The plan.
I know I've talked with folks at Slippery Rock University, and that's a very popular major these days.
They
have a good program there, yeah. Well, if that's what you decide to do, good luck.
Thank you.
And don't think you have to go to L.A. You could practice here, too.
Well, yeah.
Weather's a little nicer there.
Well, that's
you're right.
More consistent.
Oh, it's nice now.
So you've done a lot of shows, too?
Yes, I've done many shows here.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, other places. But
mainly at school? Or?
Yeah, mainly at school.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Madeline? Any history of theater before you took this magnificent role of the stepmother?
Well, this is actually only my second show at Butler, but I have been doing shows on and off since I was about 7 years old. I do it at a lot of like community theater and summer programs and stuff like that.
You're talking like summer dramatics? Or,
yeah, I've done summer dramatics since I was like I said, 8 years old.
Mm-hmm. Any musical theater guild or Sing Hosanna or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, I have done Sing Hosanna. I was actually in The Music Man last fall, and then I was in their production of The Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm. We've got trouble right here in River City.
Huh? Yeah.
What did you do last year at Butler?
I was just a chef in The Little Mermaid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good show, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a very good show.
Let me swing that microphone over to Joe Atkinson there. Joe, what class are you?
I'm a senior.
Senior. Oh, boy, you're biting off a lot here because you're in the last couple of months of your high school career and you're doing a musical.
Heck yeah.
How'd you ever make time for that?
Through a lot of planning, a lot of just thinking of what I'm going to do next, how I can time everything out, and it worked pretty well.
You know, Dale Van Lanningham, this is something a lot of people don't realize. All of these young people, they're busy with schoolwork, they've got tests, they've got everything else, and yet they make time because it takes a lot of rehearsal time to put a musical together.
Yeah, we rehearse Monday through Friday, 3 to 6. It's a bit closer to the show. Evening rehearsals go longer. So it's a huge time commitment. They know that getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. I mean, the ability to learn how to manage your time and make the most of what you have is important skills in life. So,
do you cast before the holiday break, or is it the first thing you do when you come back?
We have auditions in December, yeah, before a break, mm-hmm. So that we can start, you know, and we can hit the ground running as soon as we get back from break. So we started right after Christmas break in January there. And we've rehearsed pretty much nonstop since.
And here we are, the middle of March. It's a lot of rehearsal time, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Back to you, Joe. Any thoughts on what you might do with your life after high school, or are you still unsettled as well?
I just recently committed to Youngstown State University.
Good for you.
For music performance and as well as music production.
So music performance vocally or instrumentally?
Vocally.
So you've been singing for a while?
Yeah, I've been a choir kid for as long as I can remember.
Did you have to audition to be accepted at Youngstown?
Yes, I did.
Oh, wow. That must have been traumatic. It would be for me anyway. I don't know. Well, you were able to do something you had prepared, I hope. Yeah,
it took me about 2 months to work on 2 pieces that I had set up for it.
Wow. So music performance and music production, what's that?
So it's whenever, so you know how people just get into a studio and they start recording mm-hmm. their songs mm-hmm. and all that, so that way it gets released to the public. I would be the person sitting behind the board making sure everything sounds good, sometimes adding my own musical expertise into it, making it sound good, and so that way whenever people listen to it, they can listen to a very good product.
Well, you could do both. You know, that's Quincy Jones is a good example, a musician and a producer. Famous producer. Well, gosh, good luck if that's what you decide to do.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you'll be at Youngstown State. You're going to live there or you're going to commute?
Yeah, I'm going to live there.
Yeah, good for you. So you're the only junior, or the only senior in this class. Oh, you're a senior too?
Yeah.
And what would you like to do, Madeline, after high school?
Well, next fall I'm going to BC3 to pursue a career in nursing, and I would eventually like to become a behavioral health nurse practitioner.
Do you know where you're going to go to school yet?
I'm going to BC Free, and then they have a program set with Chatham where you can go there at BC Free for 2 years and then go to Chatham for a year to get your bachelor's, so I could only have my bachelor's in 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then I would either like to go to Pitt or Duquesne for grad school.
Have you been accepted at BC Free already?
Yeah, I have.
Well, that's good because I don't have to tell you, that's a very competitive admission to get into the nursing program at Butler County Community College. It's mm-hmm. a popular major, and they don't take only the best. So, you have to work hard though. And you got a lot of school facing you here.
Yeah, I do. But it's like I've always been interested in psychology, but I've never wanted to be an actual psychologist or a therapist because I would rather like I also am really interested in like anatomy and like medical stuff, so I would always like to like go into that field at the same time. So I thought that that was the best like thing for me to do.
Excellent. Very good. You must be a pretty good student.
I would say I'm pretty decent. I'm like not the best, but like I'm up there.
I got a headache just thinking about all the studying you're going to have to do over the next several years. Well, that's terrific. Big cast for this, Dale?
Yeah, we have a cast of 71, and then we have, I believe it's 18, 19, I think it's 19 in the pit.
Wow.
And then we've got about six, seven kids on running crew, and yeah, so it's a pretty good size.
Do you use all student musicians in the orchestra pit?
All of them are students, yeah. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the
student. And you use all students to build your sets and everything, too?
For the most part, yeah. Yeah, we have scenery crews every Saturday from 9 to 4, and the students are required to attend to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they learn how to do it. That's also how it gets done. Yeah.
So I'm assuming you've got townspeople and other dancers at the ball and so on to fill out
people
your
people in the community, and yeah. Mm-hmm. Lots of chorus parts, yeah.
I hope I've mentioned all the principals. I got the prince, right? We have Joe Michelle. We have the town caller. Does the town caller have a name, Joe?
Lord Pinkleton.
Oh, yes. It's hard to say that with a straight face, isn't it? yeah, I guess that would be most of the
We
principals.
Also have the prince's regent.
Who
helps him rule until he's ready to. That's played. The character's name is Sebastian. Mm-hmm. It's played by Gabe Stupka.
Excellent, excellent. So, again, there have been some additions of cast members down through the years from the original TV production in 1957.
Yeah, there's no king and queen. In the original, there was.
Ah.
In effect, Sebastian has kind of replaced those two.
No king and queen.
Yeah.
Wonder what Elizabeth and Prince Philip have to say about that, huh? probably doesn't play well in London. By the way, even though it started out as a TV production featuring Julie Andrews, it did eventually go to Broadway, didn't it?
Oh yeah. It in 2013, mm-hmm. they finally got it there, and that's the version we're doing. So it's updated. They added some songs and just changed some things around to make it a little more contemporary. It's good. It's a pretty funny script. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got some good lines. It's a lot of fun. It's good for all ages.
I think I failed to ask Madeline if she got to do any singing as the stepmother. Do you do a song or two?
I'm in the song that Amanda was talking about, A Lovely Night and Driving for the Moonlight, and that's basically the only singing I do. My character is more like dialogue and just like, you know.
Is more that comic relief.
Yeah, more comic relief, like uh-huh. John Michelle.
Well, you need that in a musical.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Bette Rogers in Hammerstein, Oklahoma, it's got comic relief all the way through it.
Yeah.
Well, terrific. Thanks for taking the time, especially on opening day, to come down and chat with us here. I appreciate that. Anybody nervous, or are you ready to go?
I'm excited. No.
Yeah, after all these years of doing shows, the nerves kind of don't affect you.
They don't really, like mm-hmm. you said, it doesn't affect.
And besides, with this show, you know what's going to happen. The curtain goes up and it's magic.
Yes. Hopefully. Very magical.
Hopefully. Magic. The pumpkin turns into a carriage.
Yes.
Well, again, thanks for coming down. And Dale, thank you too as well.
Thanks for having us.
Tickets, there are some tickets, but
there are tickets available both nights, tonight, tomorrow, 7:30, $12 at the door.
And that's at the Senior High Auditorium.
Yes, Senior High Auditorium.
Terrific. Dale Van Lanningham, the director of the show, he's also on the faculty. You teach what?
Social studies.
Social studies at Butler Senior High, and we thank our students, our young adults visiting with us here, Joe Atkinson, Madeline Welsh, Drew Brown, and Amanda Bishop. I got all the names correct, didn't I?
Yep.
How about that? I got a gold star right now on my forehead here. Nice to meet you all. We thank our earlier guests as well. We chatted with Jillian Cantor and also with Sally Rush Wagner about the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage. It took until 1920. Ladies may not realize that, till 1920 before women got the right to vote here in the United States. So they're planning a big celebration next year. It'll be the 100th anniversary. So we thank Sally for being with us as well. On the Monday edition of It's Your Turn, we're going to be talking about traumatic brain injury, not just football injuries, but other stuff. And we'll also have guests with us from the Ellen O'Brien Geyser Addiction Center on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy St. Patrick's weekend. And we'll see you Monday at 12:30 here on It's Your Turn on WISR.
Butler Health System is the top 100 hospital for getting Doug back to playing with his grandkids and managing his farm.
For ensuring that Craig made it to his daughter's college graduation.
For helping Ray travel to Europe to visit his family.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide nationally recognized care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Let the sun catch you crying. The night's the time for all your tears. Your heart may be broken tonight, but tomorrow in the morning light, don't let the sun catch you crying. The nighttime shadows disappear.